Today on Broadcast, we are talking about opting out and opting back in. You know, if you're a mom who has left the workforce or thinking about going back, you're not going to want to miss this episode.
Broad topics, broad minds, broad hosts, but not just for broads. This is Broadcast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal.
Today's Broadcast is brought to you by BarkBox. Oh. I love those.
Nice.
I love those little bark boxes. Have you seen those?
Yeah, they're so cute.
They are so cute. And you just pay like a few bucks a month and you get something different for your dog. And like, I have three dogs. So go to getbarkbox.com/broadcast and you can get a free month. If you get subscribed to 6 or 12 months, you can get a free month. So getbarkbox.com. Say that five times fast, Kim Goldman.
Barkbox.com
slash broadcast. So welcome.
Hi.
Welcome. Hi. How are you?
What's up?
What a day.
What a day.
What a day.
There's so many great things happening in Europe today, but I'm too stupid to understand. So we're just going to move past it.
Are they great?
Yeah, so good. Yeah.
All right. So leaving it at that. So what's going on with you this week? What do you have going on?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No, I'm nothing.
You're saving lives. Your kids are out of your son's out of school, but also your students are out of school.
My students, you have to back that up. I run a nonprofit that counsels teenagers. And so, yes, we are out of schools out for summer. So I'm just cleaning up my office, getting ready for my new group of staff to come in. But yeah, I'm just I have a couple events coming up.
So you have a new staff every time, every like semester?
Every year.
Oh, every year.
Yeah.
And they come in and they counsel and all that stuff. So you have to train them every year.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That just sounds exhausting to me.
It is exhausting, but you know, that's what happens when you get free labor. We're a teaching organization. So my staff that comes in are getting their masters of social work. So their first and second year level students. Mm-hmm. So they give me free service and I give them their hours so they can get their licenses and stuff.
Aren't you so impressed with me that I'm pretending that I don't know this stuff?
Yeah.
Of course I know this stuff, but I think it's really interesting for others to know this stuff. So you'll be happy this morning. I thought maybe you paid my son because...
Mine's costing me a fortune. I can't afford it anymore.
Yeah. But he... I said to him this morning, I have to go pick up Emma, our new intern, right?
Right.
And he said, are you going to get dressed first? And I'm like, what? What do you mean? I'm dressed. And he goes, Mom, you look like you just rolled out of bed. And like, I had showered and was, I thought looking pretty, at least acceptable, other than the wet hair that I was going to do when I got back.
Yeah.
But he did not think so. And I thought, I bet it's Kim. She just doesn't want to do video so badly that she's just telling my son to, I don't know, it's a stretch. I'm stretching.
I was like, wait, there's a dig coming because I didn't brush my hair yet today.
No, because people don't always hear it. But like, I'm trying to get us a little more branched out on the interwebs, you know, YouTube and things like that, because people for some reason respond to us there.
It's because we're so pretty.
No, because I think that people want to have a true relationship and not just listen to our squawky squawks. I don't know.
No, listen.
Will you guys tell Kim, please go to our Facebook page and say, we want your video series.
Yeah.
Please.
AKA, please brush your hair. McRatterson.
Are you guys Team Jackie or Team Kim here? Like, are you cool hanging out? Like, I know you've subscribed on iTunes. So maybe you're in your car or, you know, I would say in the valet carpool pickup lane, but I guess school's out. But, you know, you're doing your thing. Sometimes I'll put my headphones on and, clean the house.
You do?
Listen to a podcast.
I don't like things in my ears. I'm so worried. I don't know where this came from. I don't like the glasses that where the little tabs fall on your nose, you know, like those little plastic things. I don't like things in my ears, but headphones like you have hurt my ears. Like I feel too confined in there. That's a line from a movie. And I don't like flip-flops. I don't like things between my toes. So what do you... Somebody needs to tell me what is wrong with me.
Some sensory integration issues.
I might.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't mind tags. But yeah, I just so like the headphones that I have on now, I drives me nuts. I don't like things poking in my ears.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I just blast things. I don't wear headphones around my house that much. In my car, I try to use the Bluetooth. Yeah.
The Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm. But then it's, that doesn't always sound good anyway. But yeah. Anyway, so.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Did you see Finding Dory?
No.
Did anybody out there see Finding Dory? I did see Finding Dory.
Really?
But I have someone that I know who said to me that there are gay fish in Finding Dory. And I sat there with my son and I'm like, I don't believe I saw any gay fish. And my friend was like, yes, there's gay fish in it. And I'm like, I don't remember their scene. Anyway, it became like a whole conversation. But this person doesn't want
to
see.
Why is that so surprising to you? Oh, the person doesn't want to see it because they're a gay fish?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But that's like a side note. But
I don't know. I kind of think that's the lead.
Well, it is. But like in the same breath, I'm like, so I'm sitting there and I said to my son, I'm like, were there any gay fish? And finally, I was just curious if I missed it.
Huh.
And not that I personally don't care. And
so
it was,
are you saying they teach about gay things in their school? Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's funny. No, I was just curious. I was just curious if I missed it and B.
Okay, there's another thing to write on our Facebook page or actually you can comment on the show notes for this episode as well. Anywhere you want. Just talk to us. Twitter, but it
made me think that like, you know, there's all these people that think that like Bert and Ernie were the gay couple in Sesame Street.
Beds.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that's a product of this, right? Ricky and Lucy had separate beds. So anyway, but yeah, I was just like, do people look for it? Which I would think is a yes. But I was like, really? I was going through my brain and thinking in that movie, I don't remember any gay fish.
I think that movies since the beginning of time have...
Subliminal messages?
Have messages in there, you know? That aren't necessarily in your face, but, you know, and why not? I'm not a fish expert, unless you're talking sushi. I love it. But there must be, like, if you would think homosexual fish, if there are other animals.
I don't think you say homosexual fish. I just say gay fish. It took me watching Inside Out, which I love that movie, twice to totally understand that movie. Because the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, I love this. This is such a sweet story. And then I watched it again. I'm like, oh, there's the message. I missed it the first time.
Oh.
Yeah.
That movie depressed me for days.
It did?
I was like, I kid you not. There was something like...
Well, core memories. Yeah, it was very heavy, but I also thought it was kind of sweet.
It was sweet. And the thing is, you can't have joy if you don't have the sadness and the whole thing.
Right. Like, I didn't get that right away is my point. So it's very possible that I missed the fish.
We were going to be dissecting...
Animated
films today.
Yeah. Well, I have a whole...
Because we're moms and moms watch a lot of animated movies.
Well, we do. And so I know I'm going to get yelled at for this, but the movie Up, I'm not a fan of the movie Up because I didn't like the fact that they got trapped in a cave or whatever they were and the man was trying to kill the kid. Like, I didn't like that. There was no reason for it. Like, they could have tried to trap him in a closet or in a cage, but he was trying to kill him with a machete or whatever it was.
Right.
I didn't like that.
Cray cray.
And I didn't think that was necessary for an animated film. Like, you didn't need that part. And it's sort of like I feel like with regular films, you don't need the gratuitous graphic scenes.
Right.
So why in an animated film did you need to have the bad guy trying to kill the kid with a machete? Like, I didn't, whatever the weapon was. I didn't like that. So I've blocked Up.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's like the last thing I would think of when I think of the movie Up. I just think of poor little Mr. Fredrickson. Okay, I can't even because he reminds me of my dad, so we're moving on.
Wow. Tom and Jerry. Yeah, okay.
Tom and Jerry. So, yeah. You should not see. I'm trying to think of the name of the movie we recently saw that's out there right now. People, help me out here.
What is it? What's it about?
It's Zootopia.
Oh.
That is one dark movie.
Really? Why? Because all the animals are locked up in... Why?
Because it's like... It's kind of like Goodfellas, Sopranos, or like it's really interesting.
I like that my son is at an age now that we don't have to always go see the animated movies.
Like the
we watched Panic Room last night. My son and
is
I.
Is that rated R?
Yeah, but there's just some swearing in it, but not any more than what he hears me do.
Right.
So,
I have a theory about swearing.
What?
That I there's no correlation, like there's no scientific proof, there are not even like stories or what do you call it, what would you call it? Like the anecdotes,
uh-huh.
I almost said antidotes, that parents who swear lead to like children who murder or do drugs or like there's nothing there.
Oh, say so cuss away. Is that what you're saying?
No, but my point is like if that's the worst thing that happens.
Yeah.
Like my kids are loved and I.
Yeah, they're effing loved too.
I've got their back. I've got, you know, it's so yes.
Here's the thing. My says some grown up. My son says, thank you for saying grown up. I always say grown up words.
Yeah, because so, they're not bad words.
They're not bad words. Yeah. So,
well, they are bad words.
Well, at my house, they're grown up words because I say them. So my son can't even like whisper a word that he might hear someone else say. Like he won't. And I'm like, Sam, tell me who swears. So-and-so swears and so-and-so. What do they say? I can't tell you. I'm like, I'm giving you a free pass. I can't do it. His worst word that he's said that he is like mortified is crap.
Oh, yeah.
So considering how trucker I am in my house.
Yeah. How did he get this fear? Who put that in him?
Because I keep telling him it sounds disgusting. Like it doesn't sound classy. Like I'm very, I apologize when I swear.
But the words you say are classy?
No, that's, no, I say to him, like it doesn't, I don't like that I do it and I should be more mindful.
Right.
But sometimes it slips out and sometimes, and so I'm very aware of when I do it and I don't want him to. But I have to, I mean, I'm my own worst critic and I want to be able to lead by example. So if I let one rip, then, you know, and like I try not to do it in front of him because I just don't want that to be the behavior that I model. Right. But it happens because I'm human.
But also, you know, I try to go, you know, I probably could have found a better word. What are some words I could have used? And then we like.
Well, it's not better when they say friggin'. That's the same thing. They're just.
No. I just mean a more intelligent word.
Oh, you know. Yeah. Sometimes you need a good old F-bomb. Sometimes that's all. Yeah, I'm very fine. I'm totally fine with that. But I just find it funny that my son is so not. He's so innocent in so many ways, but he just crap. That's what it was. Crap.
Yeah.
He whispers that.
It's funny because, you know, as the kids are getting older, my oldest is going into junior high and, you know, and he's got some social delays. And so he hears jokes and he doesn't really necessarily get them.
Yeah.
And so he came home one day and started telling me this joke. And I realized like pretty quickly on that.
It was heading nowhere fast.
It was a dick joke. Oh. And so I was like, whoa, wait, what? You know, like,
that's funny.
Let's stop this now. This is maybe something you run by your dad.
The you kids, when I.
But I and please help me with this one because I struggle between being okay to hear anything.
Yeah.
That month, because I'm not really offended by much.
Yeah.
And letting them know, you know, you never speak like that in front of your mother because I want.
My rule, but Sam and I talk about is there's a time and place and you need to know, you need to learn your audience. Mm. Like not everybody read a room. And so not everybody is as, open to things as I am, for example, you know, and I said, and if you're around adults, I never want to hear that kind of language because it's disrespectful. And as a 12-year-old, it is disrespectful to you for you to be saying dick in front of another kid's parents.
Yes.
Like, so that's in our house. And I said, there's no reason for it. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, there's no reason to repeat it. But when you're in front of other people, you just don't, you know, but you know, in my house, like the first time I heard my son say balls, I was like, oh, I'm like, wait, but that's what they are. And I don't want him walking around saying scrotum or testes because then he's the testicle
but
kid.
You can't even say like, go pick up the balls in the backyard.
I can't without
my kids going like,
oh my God, in Sam's basket, he plays basketball. Every time the coach yells, hold your balls. I'm the idiot in the back of going, hee hee hee.
You wonder where he gets
it. I'm like Beavis and Butthead by myself. Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. I can't believe we're actually having on, you know, two respectable women when this is how our show is.
Hey, you know, you opt in, you opt out. This is what happens. You opt in, you know, you have to be careful. You say scrotum, you opt out, you say balls. That's kind of how we're going to apply this to our.
Yeah, I think people today will either be opting into broadcast or opting out.
So you got to know your audience.
If you opt out, we're sorry. It was nice knowing you.
Yeah,
but I don't know. We are who we are. Or what is we is who we is. Or didn't Popeye say something?
Like I am that? What I am.
I am what I am. Thank you.
we'll get there.
All right. Well, we're gonna go to break. But when we come back, we're gonna talk about opting out. Should you do it? One mom says absolutely not. She thinks that you should. Never opt out. And then we're also later on, Carrie Dolan from Opt In is going to talk about what to do when you have opted out, and she's going to help you out. So there's a lot of opt out in out side to side.
I feel like I should be doing the round of Rosie or something.
Yeah, so we will be right back after this message.
What does being abroad mean to you? A broad tells it like it is.
Doesn't take no for an answer.
She exudes confidence.
A warrior princess of the urban jungle.
Being a broad is being diverse.
Strong enough to do things on your own, but smart enough to know when to ask for help.
We succeed. We get right to the top.
Being a broad is 10% of what happens to you and 90% how you deal with it.
Broadscast, where every broad's voice matters.
You're listening to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal. They're huge in anywhere other than somewhere that you've been before.
Welcome back to Broadscast. Hi, Kim.
Hello, Jackie McDougal.
So we, in doing a little research for our guest later on in the show, Carrie Dolan, we were asking on Facebook, asking people their experience with opting in, opting out. All that good stuff. And I was introduced to our first guest, Heather Joyce of Work Kids Wine. Heather, are you with us?
I am. Hi there.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, sure.
So it's funny because, you know, I'm asking on Facebook and your partner in crime, Erin, and I are Facebook friends, and she had sent me to your post called The Opt-Out Penalty Box.
Ooh.
That you wrote a while back. So it's filled with personal story. Can you give us a little bit of background on the personal story?
Yeah, sure. So just by way of background, I'm a corporate lawyer, came up through the ranks, through a big law firm. And then eventually, after having my first child, moved, into working for a big media company. I was there for 5 or 6 years, on a great career track, had one of the best bosses I've ever had while I was there. She promoted me while I was on maternity leave. And then, you know, a few years into it, I had a 3-year-old, a 1-year-old, a really demanding job, and a spouse that was traveling a lot. And I just was having a hard time juggling it. And I remember that she told me, you know, she was a good friend of mine, and also had 3 children at the time. And, you know, she really encouraged me to not quit my job. You know, we tried a number of things. You know, I did some part-time work. I did some contract work. But then ultimately, you know, I read the article that the well-known New York Times article about the opt-out revolution. And at the time, it really gave me like sort of the internal permission to listen to that little voice in my head and say, you know what, I'm gonna take some time off and spend a few years with my kids and kind of get this situation under control. One of the personal stories I shared in the essay that I wrote was, I was so stressed out at one point that I actually dialed into the EAP number at work. And if you don't know what that is, that's the mental health hotline that big companies give their workers, right? And right, that counselor.
I think Broadscast needs that number, yeah. Actually.
I know. I'm the only person I know that's ever dialed it. And
no, you're the only one who admits it. So that's good for you. Good.
That's right. Right. And the counselor was sort of unhelpful. She just said I was doing too much. So
long story short.
Like, that's right. So I quit my job. And then, you know, we moved across the country. I had a 3rd baby and woke up one morning and was in the middle of a divorce, 3,000 miles across the country from where I had started, and needed to get back to work. And it had been a couple of years. And so it was right, inconveniently, it was right around that time that another article, a Forbes article entitled Why Opt-Out Moms Can't Catch Up came out. And that wasn't encouraging.
Yeah. Wow. It's like the media is following your journey.
Totally. I think it must be generational. So anyway, I then had to proceed to get back into the workforce and did that. But, you know, wrote The Opt-Out Penalty Box about both my experience and the experiences of a lot of other people around me that that I've seen, in that, you know, when you're sort of the point of the essay was that, you know, in the moment when I was quitting my job, I really didn't understand sort of how serious that decision was and what the real tangible ramifications of that were going to be for me later on when I, you know, inconveniently needed to get back to work.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Do you think that, you know, because you go, it's kind of very black and white, it seems, with you, that you're like, don't quit. You know, like, do you think that maybe there's a fine line, or not even a fine line, but a preparation period where, yes, you're at work, but, you know, if you're a lawyer taking on private clients or consulting or something, that you can kind of fill that, you know, gap and build a bridge from your career now to your career. I mean, in hindsight is always, you know, 2020, but it just, I don't necessarily agree that no one should ever quit, because I think that we all have our own journeys that we kind of have to, and Kim's going to roll her eyes because I said journeys, but we all have our own thing that we have to go through. And yours is like, you know, you were there for your kids for those 2 years. I'm not saying that parents who are working are not there for their kids, but I'm just saying, like, can you look back and see the things that were positive and why it was a good choice for you?
Yeah. Of course I can. And those couple of years were great for a whole bunch of reasons. I think that if I had it to do all over again, and this is the advice that I give everybody who comes and talks to me about it, is don't quit completely, right? Your resume can I think what I and others have encountered the most issues with are those gaps where there's no work at all. You know, you can do contract work, you can do freelance work, you can do a lot of different things on a very, very, very part-time basis, but your resume looks smooth. So that if and when you need to go ramp back up, you know, into a full-time gig or, you know, or engaging in more work, there aren't those big gaps that throw up those big red flags. And I think attach the stigma that unfortunately exists in the real world.
Well, what do you, I have men friends who left their career to stay home with their kids because moms were making more money and it was better for the dad. So what do you think that the same opt-in, opt-out conversation applies to men versus women?
That's an interesting question. I have never had a man come talk to me about it before.
Oh, I have a couple. Yeah, I can send. Yeah,
men don't need direction.
Yeah,
that's right. Men don't need direction. You know, I don't know. I
think it's worse.
I think it could be worse. Yeah, I think that it's you know, in thinking about what it looks like when you're sitting in that interview chair across from somebody, you know, and they're trying to gauge the level of, you know, engagement, commitment, experience. You know, I really do. I think there's a major stigma in the work world that attaches to people who take time off to take care of family. Now, do I think that's right? No, I don't. But right. I think that's real. And, you know, we live in the real world.
So do you ever think that there's an opportunity, though, like for those gap periods, for example, if you're in between positions, like to be able to own it and say, you know what, I took time off to take care of my ailing parent or for my newborn baby, or and if the company doesn't want to hire you because you did that, is that the company you then want to work for anyway? I mean, I totally hear you that, like, this is the reality, but I just feel like we're contributing to it.
If
we're finding things to pass the time so that our resume looks good, like, where are we then being true to who we are as career people and being able to balance work and home?
Yeah, I do think the right approach, you know, if you make that decision for yourself based on your own circumstances, and certainly we all can and sometimes have to do that. I do think the right way to approach it is to be straightforward about it. You know, I've certainly interviewed people who have said that they took time off to, you know, take care of a child that, you know, had some special needs for a period of time, or an ailing parent, and I get it. And I do agree with you that, you know, certainly when I was reentering the work world, it was like, well, if somebody isn't going to hire me because, you know, I haven't been in the work world for the last 2 years taking care of my family, I probably don't want to work with or for those people.
It's 2 years. You know what I mean? That's the thing. Is like,
it was nothing.
That's a blink, you know?
But, you know, and this is why I encourage people to be very careful when they're making those choices. You know, when I went back to work after only 2 years, I took a major step backwards in terms of seniority, in terms of pay, and it took me years. I mean, I really think it's been 5 years, and it took about that much time for me to get back where I would have been. So there are real costs in addition to, you know, just getting the job that, you know, people need to think about.
Well, and companies are not always looking for loyalty anymore, like the way that I was raised. My dad was raised in that generation that they invested in people that were willing to commit to the company. Like my friend, the man that opted out, he was in a very technical career. So opting out for him really hurt him, because by the time he was ready to go back in, he was so, the technology that he used was so antiquated that there was no way for him to get back in.
They don't use the abacus anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly. And so he really struggled, because now they were bringing in young guys who didn't need to make their mortgage payment. And they were, you know, paying a fraction of the salary for the workload, as opposed to the commitment to the career that my friend was willing to give. And they don't pay for that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is most industries are looking for young and hungry.
But the young and hungry are beboppers. Like, that's one thing that I've learned, and bebopping, like, from job to job, they're looking for the next best thing. There's really not a reward anymore for longevity and for
loyalty
and commitment. So,
yeah, I think that's right. And you know, I do also think in this, I know this isn't the topic of this conversation today, but I think the workplace is changing too, you know, and, you know, again, I was working, trying to work out these, you know, part-time flex time type options, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. And the new generation of workers that, you know, sits around me every day now, expects that as just part of the work world. Mm-hmm. And that really wasn't the case even 5 or 6 years ago. That was really, really out there. My boss, in order to get that, had to totally go to bat.
Yeah. I mean, it's in every industry, I think it's difficult being a parent. And then we've had people on too, who are like, why should I pick up the slack because you have a soccer game and I can't leave work early, you know, when they don't have a kid. It's like, but you're right. There's no, this country, we do not
celebrate
or recognize the importance of the work-life balance and how that, having that creates more productive people, better families, stronger, like, you know, the kids do better when the parent isn't like feeling that they can't do it. You know, I just think we're in the wrong direction. And then, you know, not to get political, but we're in bigger trouble. You know.
So Heather, what kind of advice or suggestions do you have for people that are in a situation that you found yourself in, that they cannot continue to go to work full time, like, and their only option is to leave? Like, what do you suggest?
Yeah, my suggestions are first to make a plan, right? To really think about it in advance, and if you were like me, you know, if they're like me, you know, just dying, you know, some of the first things to do are to really look at your situation and I think evaluate whether there are other changes, there are other pressure points that can be alleviated. The supervisor that I mentioned to you guys that was so great at the time really encouraged me candidly to hire more help. And I remember looking at her like, you are crazy, right? Like, I don't want to hire more help. Are you going to pay me more so I can hire that help?
Right.
It felt untenable, but now, you know, again, I'm much further ahead. If I had invested, even though it felt counterproductive, if I had invested in more help, I probably could have stayed in the workforce. And then, you know, the long-term benefits in terms of earning capacity, satisfaction in my job. I mean, I really like what I do. You know, those things would have paid off. I didn't listen to her advice. She was ahead of me at the time. And I dish out that advice pretty often.
Did she have kids?
She had three. Yeah, okay. She had three kids too. And we were pregnant with our at the same time. So she was really kind of in the same boat with me.
Right.
That said, she did have a partner at home, which is different.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's apples and oranges right there. You know, when you have somebody at home who's handling, picking up the slack and doing some of the stuff, like, I'll take on jobs where I work 14 hours, you know, for a 9-month period. But
right.
I know that my husband is clocking out at 6 and that he's going to be home with the kids, you know, and or whatever. But we would love it. I mean, where can people find you? Online. Sorry. We have to go.
My address is. Yeah.
I know. I'm like, there was no sequitur. That was a non sequitur. Where can people find you? Work Kids Wine is your blog, right?
Yeah, you can find us at workkidswine.com. Yes. That's where you can find us.
Awesome. Because I think that, you know, you have a lot of insight and I think that, you have to come on again and talk to our listeners.
We've done a couple of articles on this with a bunch of practical tips. So, for people that are looking for that,
tips.
Yeah.
And we will link out. We will link out to that for sure.
All right. Thank you so much.
Heather Joyce. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We will be right back.
You're listening to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougall, the most riveting hour of radio ever.
Welcome back to Broadscast.
I opted in for the...
You opted in.
I opted
to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, Carrie. It's hey. You're on the air with us at Podcast. I know that was.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm playing switchboard operator today as well. So, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So, thank you so much for joining us. You are the CEO and founder of Opt In, which is optbackin.com. Oh, we lost Carrie.
What?
We lost Carrie.
Oh. Oh. She probably didn't like our intro. She's like, do-over. Mulligan.
Yeah, right. So yeah. Anyway, so while we get her back, why don't we talk a little bit about
Heather?
Heather, thank you. So, I mean, you never opted out, but you've opted to change your situation several times.
Yeah, I don't have the luxury of opting out because I've been a single parent for 12 years, so I didn't have those opportunities to opt out,
right?
Because
right.
the it was 100% on me to take care of business,
right,
so
of course
I didn't have that. So I did, however, become fortunate to bring myself to a company that was very supportive of my home life. So my current job with the Youth Project is very supportive of family and my son and my relationship and my need to be part of his life. But yeah, it would have been great to be able to take some specific time off, even more than whatever the state of California gives you, you know?
Right, right.
But I certainly can appreciate the need to have to check out, you know, and to stay at home and the importance of that. And I wish that more people were able to be given those opportunities.
Right, right. I think we have Carrie back on the line. We're having some trouble today.
Yes.
Are you there?
I am here.
Okay. So you are the CEO and founder of Opt In, which is optbackin.com. Tell us a little bit. So, you know, you went from 0 to 60 here. So like, let's start way back when you were working and you decided to leave. Like, tell us your story, Carrie.
Okay.
That's so weird.
So I'm having some audio feedback here. Do you hear it?
I could hear myself back, which is
me too.
It's always frightening. So, okay, just go ahead. We'll work that out.
Okay. So my story, I listened to Heather, and my story is very similar, ironically. And
oh, I can hear the feedback. Is there?
Yeah. I have to.
Oh, because you're listening to the live show probably, right? If you turn,
okay.
Yeah, turn off
oh,
the
yeah,
live.
Just turn okay. us off and listen to us here.
Yeah. Yeah, turn off. You can turn off the.
Okay.
But it does. We can tell you can listen to us live on broadcast.com. So clearly that works.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, let me say that Heather and my story is so similar. I have to connect with Heather offline. So my story is that, you know, I was working for a technology startup company in Manhattan before they used to call them that back in, you know, 96. And, you know, worked for about 15 years and moved my way up, traveled all over the world and found myself pregnant spontaneously with identical twins. And at 16 weeks, I hadn't told my employer that I was pregnant, which... Of course, nowadays I feel bad about hiding that. But so I went to a doctor's appointment and my doctor said, if you don't
16 weeks pregnant with twins and they
able to hide
tell.
It. Yeah.
Well, that, and there lies the problem. So at 16 weeks, he said, listen, you know, you're having a very high risk pregnancy. You know, you haven't been eating and taking care of yourself such you need to go on bed rest in order to, you know, salvage this pregnancy. So I never went back to work and never cleaned out my desk. I went home and from 16 weeks and the last 4 weeks in the hospital. So that choice to opt out was made for me.
Right.
I never, you know, really had the discussion in, you know, discussion with my, you know, then husband to say, what are we going to do? You know, how are we going to do this? So I thought, okay, having twins, I'll be challenged enough. I'll stay home for a couple of years. And I had relocate for my husband's career and, you know, lost my contact similar to Heather. And
just found myself, you know, after 4 years for me, I had my third child then, and then I've needed to go back to work, not for any reason other than I was dying at home. You know, I lost who I was. I lost my self-esteem, everything, you know, growing up in a working class family. I mean, I was a worker, and that stimulated me. And although I feel thankful that I was able to stay home with my kids for as long as I did, it really, you know, changed who I was. So I guess, you know, listening to Heather and talking about this, I think it's such a personal decision for every woman.
Absolutely.
And what I would say is, you know, spend a lot of time, talk to your partner, you know, think about what this means for yourself, knowing that you might not be easy to get back in.
Right.
Which, you know, of course, you know, I totally agree with her. It's not. But some women have, you know, I mean, I feel I was financially able to stay at home, but some women have to stay at home because their job won't pay for the childcare.
Right, right. So sometimes it costs more money to go to work.
Yeah, to get the childcare. So you mentioned that you felt like it changed you when you stayed home. But like, in what ways do you think it impacted you as a woman or as a mom that you took yourself out of the workforce? Or that you were had to take yourself out, I should say.
Yes. I think I lost who I was. I wasn't able to switch to, you know, some women are able to kind of switch to that mother role automatically and kind of feel really fulfilled with that role. For me, that didn't come naturally to me. And I think a lot of women don't talk about it and don't say, you know what, it's okay not to be happy at home. Right. You know, my sister, who was, you know, a full-time single working mom, would say, I wish I could stay home. You know, so then you had this guilt of women that wanted to stay home but couldn't, you know, telling you, you're so lucky to stay home. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't for me. And ultimately, it ruined my marriage. I would say that was the number one reason why my husband and I got divorced, because it changed who I was, and I became so unhappy at home, it ruined our marriage.
So obviously this is like a whole other area, but like, do you think in some ways that because you weren't planning that your pregnancy at the time, that maybe that could have possibly contributed, that you weren't prepped, you weren't like, it wasn't, I don't know. Now I'm getting very psychological, but I'm just curious. Yeah. Like sometimes when
but
prepare,
it wasn't a plan.
No, she said it was right. It was a spontaneous pregnancy.
Well,
so sometimes
spontaneous identical twins.
Got it.
We were definitely like, we had been married 2 years. We were, you know, going to have children. One thing is interesting is that, you know, a mentor asked me, like, tell me about the conversation you and your husband had about you staying home from work.
Right.
And I thought to myself, and we looked at each other and we said, we never had that conversation. Now, I had a big time job. You know, it was very successful. I made a lot of money. And for us not to have that conversation, I mean, I guess it was just a different time. I guess we both assumed that I would stay home for a little bit. And now times are different. So, you know, I would totally agree with Heather that, you know, you have to think seriously about that decision and you have to think about your family and what you want for yourself. But I think the bigger issue here is really changing the way society looks at the caregiver.
Right.
You know, whether it be, you know, the baby boomers that are now exiting out in order to take care of their family, or, you know, the mothers that are raising the next generation. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, every time I get speak publicly, I make this kind of funny joke out to the, you know, the CEO of LinkedIn saying, you know, I want a checkbox, you know, like instead of like looking for a job, I want something that's on LinkedIn that's acceptable to say taking care of the future generation or taking care of the previous generation.
Right.
You know, in order to not look at it like mm-hmm. such a stigma, because that's the first step in change, I think, for what we're talking about.
Absolutely. And it's funny because, and maybe you have your own thoughts on this, but I feel like if a mother or a parent stays home because they have a child with special needs, or, you know, one who's ill, one who has, you know, or parents who are ailing, then there's kind of a little more understanding. But if a mom or a parent stays home because they just want to parent, you know, it's totally different. It's like there's this understanding if that person's sick or if there's a risk of losing that person, but it's not okay if they're perfectly healthy.
Right.
I mean, isn't that a little bit weird?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I totally see that. And I agree with what you spoke about earlier. I think if you're sitting in an interview and a mother comes, you know, has an authentic story and an authentic reason why she stayed home, I think instead of trying to cover it up and, you know, trying to cover up the gaps in the resume, I think we just like have to be more honest and say, mm-hmm. I was raising our kids and I never really opted out. I changed red eyes for red eyes and deadlines for deadlines. You know, I mean, there are different deadlines, but I mean, it's not easy, you know, trying to negotiate with 3-year-old. I think you could do a fine job negotiating that contract as well, because it's equally as difficult.
Yeah. But if that person doesn't know, have kids, that they just, that'll, but, you know.
But if you think about it, I mean, you know, if you go on an interview, most likely the person sitting across from you, yes, if they're a millennial and young, yes, they're not going to understand. But most likely their wife stays home, you know, their mother stayed home with them. I mean, I think people are starting to understand and see, you know, the value. And I think we just have to keep pushing society to see the value, you know. So, I mean, I think America is suffering.
Well, I also think that people that are in that situation that stay home, we're like, oh, I'm a stay at home mom. Like, there's a tone, there's a way that people say it, even when you're in that position. Like,
they have to talk it down before somebody else does.
Right. I mean, I could never be a stay at home mom. I'm not patient enough. I'm not creative enough. I'm not. I know where I struggle. Like, those, I am in awe of parents that get to be home with their kids. I love that. I think it's incredible. That is just not something that I don't think I could manage. Like, weekends are torture for me sometimes, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I have all day. I got to figure out something to do. But so I know that's not my strength, but I'm like you, that Carrie, that I'm a worker. Like, I was raised in that. My father had a very strong work ethic. I had a job at 12 years old. Like, I love that. I love that. It soothes me. It comforts me. It makes me a better parent to my son. But I also, you know, when I listen to the people like, oh, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and there's like the it drops off at the end, I'm like, I think that's incredible. Like, but I think if you walk into an interview wanting to get back in and that's where you go, that it gives the future employer like that, oh, you know, you, I don't know. I think you take on that same tone. And if we can own it and be proud of it, maybe that's a good place to start.
Well, exactly. And that's what we're trying to do with opt-in, you know, because I've been around the country, you know, as I moved for my husband's career and met these women, and 56% of the stay-at-home moms would like to get back into the workforce, but don't know how or can't. So I started, you know, opt-in because I want to try to help these women with the challenges that I faced for so many years.
Right.
And what I did was I started my own company because that's something that I could do. I opened up the first ever drop-off childcare center inside a regional mall. So parents that stayed at home could go and have a break during the day and drop their kids off at a really nice facility and go sit in Starbucks.
Or I'm going to go get my keys. I'm going to get my keys. We'll drop them off right now.
Yeah, no, it's great. And we've seen 40,000 kids come through, and I've talked to 20,000 mothers. And I kept coming up with the same idea that these women had lost so much of themselves that's what they were like, oh yeah, I'm staying home again, you know, I'm going to the mall. But through opt-in, we're trying to empower these women. And the first thing we try to do is get back to their roots, find their needs, you know, through needs and value assessment, you know, with a certified career coach. What do you want to do? What is going to make you want to get up in the morning and leave your kids, you know, after you've been home for 2, 4, 7 years. Mm-hmm. So we go through really finding, you know, what they want to do. Because a lot of people don't want to go back to be the lawyer or the accountant that they were.
Right.
And the next big portion is the self-esteem. Like you said, you know, a lot of these women, for whatever reason, their internal dialogue is telling them that they're not worthy anymore because they left, that their experience is no longer valued. But I mean, I truly feel that experience is never outdated, you know, and that this workforce, there's a talented pool of women out there that's not tapped and that have a lot to add to society. Right. And yes, maybe it's from 9 to 3, but they can get just as much done between 9 to 3, you know, as some people get done from 8 to 5.
Right, because you learn how to multitask and learn how to power through things. So what do you – Jackie and I always have this conversation about like that quote of, you know, women can do – we can do it all. Like, we can have it all. Like, that to me creates like I vomit.
Yes.
My reflexes. Like, I want to
– I'm the opposite, because I believe having it all is a state of mind. And it's just like gratitude. So I've decided that I have it all because I do. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mean that I have to have – 80-hour work weeks, because that's, to me, not having it all. Like, if somebody, I don't think there's anybody out there that wants to have an 80-hour work week and come home and breastfeed their baby and that's not having it. Like, I think having it all shifts in your life, and having it all.
But that's not where the phrase came from, though. So if we go back to, like,
some dude probably years ago was like, oh, she does this, that's having it all. That's not my, so sorry, Kim, I just sidetracked there, but back to you, Carrie.
Yeah, no, it does. It has that stigma attached to it, that we're supposed to be the perfect mom at home, you know, perfect, you know, career woman, you know, perfect wife. And it is difficult to manage all of that.
Impossible.
Yeah, it's impossible.
So what do you say? What are you telling women now? They're at this place, this path in the road where, you know, our workforce still is not very family friendly, most of it. So how do you prepare them? I mean, are you able to prepare them to find work that fits in with their lives? Or are they kind of like, there's always a sacrifice, and that's okay. We have to understand as moms, there will always be a sacrifice. You're sacrificing something at all the time. And that's right. Just kind of, that goes, it goes with the territory. But what are you telling them, or how are you coaching them to get back into that workforce and that struggle?
Right. Well, the plan that we developed, which we're implementing, is this 6-week course. So it covers everything, like I said, from, you know, what do you want to do next, to, you know, getting them up and ready on their social media channels, you know, doing their resume, but also what I'm calling like the wellness week, because we can get the woman, you know, up and ready and empowered to go back to work. But if her family falls apart at home, then that's going to be very difficult for her to succeed. So there's some really practical things that we do, which is, you know, menu planning. Like, we'll give her a six day dinner options with like a shopping list. So she can go out on Sunday and do that, or delegate that to someone else, you know, in her group, and say, can you get these 10 things? And then she has meals ready, because it's hard for a woman who's been home for 4 or 5 years. A lot of what's holding them back is themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know, how am I going to do it? You know, like, I can barely get dinner on the table now because, you know, even when I'm staying at home. So we try to break down and give them real solutions to what's holding them back. And a lot of the time, I really feel like women are holding each other back. And so we try to get them to establish an esteem team, you know, a group of women that they are really close with around them, that they can call for favors. You know, if your child's sick, you know, who can you call? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times women don't want to ask for help. So we try to break down that and, you know, counsel them and saying that other women really don't mind picking up your child. It's really not that big of a deal. We're going there anyway, you know? So just trying to talk them through all the different steps. And we do this through a 6-week period. We're going to implement kind of more of a crash course 2-day for women that are, need to get back to work quicker, mm-hmm. And need some real practical, solutions. And, you know, trying to change the way women work. So I have I'm building a network of companies that are family friendly, that will offer project-based work for these women.
Oh, that's great.
Because what I'm finding is they don't advertise it per se, but when we went through that recession, a lot of large corporations went to a very lean workforce. Mm-hmm. So what's happening inside those large corporations is the project-based stuff is not getting done, because the group that they have working for them now, you know, let's call them millennials, they'll do the work that's, you know, and they
required.
Have great requirement, they have great values, but they're not going to go and stay extra and longer and over the weekend to get those project-based stuff done. So what they're finding is a lot of projects on the back burner are not getting done. Why not hire someone to come in and just do that project? It's essential to the business, but it's not essential that the person who's doing them know the business in and out.
Right. And it saves them money because they don't have to pay insurance, you know, insurance and benefits and all that stuff.
Right. So that's one, you know, and again, it's a lot of labor, because I'm going around to these companies and really going to bat for the woman, but, you know, thinking outside the box and having them think differently. And a lot of companies, you'd be surprised, you know, most of the HR is made up of women, but a couple of heads of these large corporations were men, and they were completely on board. They totally understood it. Their wives were, you know, stay at home, and they, you know, so I'm getting the support from the men, you know, to get these women back to work and kind of offer them something different. But it's a very time consuming, you know, passion of mine.
Are there companies that don't want to participate in that? Like what you're doing, and what would be the reason that someone wouldn't?
Yeah, I spoke to a very large technology company, and I spoke to the head of diversity, who was a young girl who just started. And we talked a little bit about flex work and part-time, and she said that in their 2015 review, there was 50,000 people that worked for this company, and 100 worked part-time.
Oh, wow.
And I said, so she said, we're not interested. She goes, but if so-and-so does it, we'll do it, you know, named another big technology company. So it's, yeah, so I do get, you know, and you'd be surprised, some of the newer technology companies, you know, do have a different philosophy where, you know, we started this working 80 hours a week and everyone else has to work 80 hours a week, but that's changing. And, you know, I do, give the millennials credit for that because they're demanding a work-life balance and the previous generations didn't.
Right.
So I think in that way, that's going to help change the way women work.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think that people of whatever our generation, what is our generation?
I don't know what we've lost.
No, I don't know. we
stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
We have been trying to pretend that we don't need work-life balance. Like for somehow having
because children, we think we have to have it all.
Yeah, but yeah. Somehow having children is kind of a weakness. And so you go into work and I'm there are plenty of times at organizations that you would think would be family friendly that I've worked, freelanced, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you try to pretend that you don't have children because mm-hmm. it's like a sign of weakness. And I work with this one woman who's a millennial. I've worked with her on a couple of projects. And she at one point was like, I work Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. I take Wednesday because I need to kind of get my own head back on straight and give myself a little bit of time and be creative and da da da. And I'm like, what? And she's 30 years old, no kids, not married. And I was in awe because I said, like, don't lose that. Because it's funny, people actually have respect for that because she's doing it for herself. But if she did it because she wanted to spend the day with her kids, forget it. You know?
Yeah, but I think that's unusual. I mean, I think that's really unusual. Yeah. I mean, and I also, again, we mentioned when we were on with Heather that I think it depends on the field you're in. Like, I'm in a mental health field. So when someone, I always joke with my staff that I really strongly encourage work-life balance, mental health days so you can take care of yourself. But please don't have your breakdown on a day where we've got group scheduled because I can't reschedule. But that's my field. Like, it's really important. But, like, my best friend who's in entertainment and she's covering 7 shows right now, she can't take those days because leaving for one day causes 3 weeks of work for her.
Right.
So there isn't that balance and she has to lie to get out of her office if the kids are, you know, getting an award at school. There's no way for her to get out. And that's a stressor for her.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, there are plenty of times where I've said I have a doctor appointment or, you know, I sometimes talk about the one boss that I could tell him I had to take my dog to the vet before I could tell them I'd take my kids to the pediatrician.
Yeah.
Because if I was taking he's an animal lover. So he's like, oh, great. Take your dog.
Yeah.
Take the whole day. You know, but if I said something about my kids, forget it.
So Carrie, question for you. So when you've got women that are going back to the workforce and they have their first interview set up, how do you prepare them? What are some good tips that you give them for like that gap period? We talked a little bit about it before, but like what are some things that you say to women so they could walk in there empowered to be able to nail those interviews?
Well, for me, I think it comes from a series of different events. You know, just being around other women in the group that are going through the same thing, helping them, you know, and having them do their resume, right? We'll help them along. But that's such an empowering step because some women just stop right there like, oh, I got to do a resume. I mean, no one even wants to do a resume when they were just switching jobs, you know, with zero break, never mind a 5 to 7 year break. So once they finish that step, you can just see how more empowered they feel. And then the next thing we do is during our interview prep session where women of the group kind of pair off and they one acts as the interviewer, one acts as the interviewee, kind of coming up with that authentic story for them to own that story and be confident about that story and come up with real ways that they, real things that they learned at home that can translate directly into the workforce. So it's kind of a series of steps, but we, you know, definitely try to come up with whatever their authentic story is that they want to use in the interview that they could feel confident and, you know, sharing that with whoever's interviewing them. And like you said before, and if that person doesn't understand the value that they had from being at home, that's probably not the right work life balance for you.
I think that I've worked in nonprofit for such a long time that when I was thinking about making the switch to working for a for-profit company, I was like, I'm never going to be able to make the leap because I've been working in this martyrdom you know, career that I'm never going to be able to be able to go to a for-profit. And it really took me having to go talk to a career coach to be able to say, just because your goal wasn't to make a profit doesn't mean you didn't manage a budget, doesn't mean you didn't act as a human resource, you know, facilitator, doesn't mean that you didn't create programs. Like, you just have to change the language and find the strengths in it to be able to transfer. And I think I would imagine you have to kind of do that with women that are coming from being at home to the workforce. You have to find the things that translate and that can go from home to work, sort of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's exactly what we do. And we partnered with a couple of different career coaches because each different career coach offers something a little bit different. A lot of the women that we see are looking to start their own company as well, you know, which I've done a couple of times. So, you know, I'm quite helpful in that space. But that requires, you know, that the saying is, you know, entrepreneurs are the only ones who will work 80 hours, not to work 40. You know, so it's a different mindset, but you know, that requires quite a different set of skills. So we try to partner with different career coaches that kind of offer different things, because that's a huge part of getting the woman up and running, you know, to kind of really evaluate that inner dialogue and what's really holding her back.
Right. Because there's a fine line between using your life experience and what you've been doing for the past 2, 5, 7 years and putting it on there like it was a job. Like, I know people who run the PTA and they are doing work that is like ridiculously harder than anything, you know, my working friends are doing. However, it's not always respected when you have PTA president, you know, and it's a volunteer, like you were talking about nonprofit, but like a volunteer position.
Yeah.
Somehow, if you're not making even minimum wage doing what you're doing really, really well, there's a stigma to that. So how do you speak to that?
Well, again, it's just trying to change the way society looks at it, you know, and you know, what the work that you guys are doing is fantastic, you know, just kind of getting women's voice out there. You know, I'm preparing to do a TED talk, and I just went through this program with 8 other women, you know, because there's not enough women, you know, on TED stages, you know, around the country. So again, just trying to, you know, empower the woman to get her voice out there, because we're the ones who have to make the change.
Right.
You know, I think we have to stop blaming everyone else. And I think we have to step up and make the change that we need.
And support each other, like you were saying earlier.
Yes.
That's really important. And that's the thing is, like, you know, you were talking about your esteem team. We call it our broad squad. But everyone needs to have one. You know, it's hard to ask for help. But there are people around that, if asking them for help is really not a big deal for them, it's just such a big deal for you that we have to kind of lean on each other a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, that's actually what my TED talk is about, you know, women, you know, why women don't support each other more. But that's another topic for conversation.
That's a topic for your TED talk that we'll have to know. When are you doing that so we can listen?
Do you have that scheduled?
It's not scheduled yet. It'll be in the fall.
Okay. And then we have to have you on then. Please come back.
Yes. Yes. It was fantastic. Yeah. So I think just, you know, just keep talking about it. And I think a lot of politicians are talking about it now. You know, so hopefully we'll see some change there. And, you know, a lot of companies now are doing a different maternity leave and paternity leave. So all those things are moving, you know, moving it along slowly, it's moving.
We'll get there. So Carrie Dolan, it's optbackin.com.
That's correct. And this coming Tuesday, the 28th, we are having a free mini workshop, you know, to kind of introduce the brand and give some women some tips. So you can go to our website at optbackin.com if you want to sign up to, you know, be part of that.
That's fantastic.
Great. We'll put that on our website.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you,
ladies. For all the work you're doing. I just, you know, we're big fans of women supporting women.
Yes. Good. Me too.
Thanks,
Have a great day, Carrie.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Awesome. So I think that...
I really, you know, I think for, you know, confidence is huge. You know, I was reading something the other day that like something with Dove campaign or whatever they were talking about, like how
you said Dove campaign.
I didn't mean it like that, but like that the women's confidence is down in the pissa.
Yeah.
So you know, I think it comes from within.
Well, reach out to us on broadcast.com. You can find all of our social media channels
Channels
there. Thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.